But I'll tell you this. I know this woman that I want to be. I know her well because I see her at my Al-Anon meetings. She's there. She's also at open AA meetings. I've met her many, many times. I meet her wherever I go. She is a woman of tremendous compassion. She is a woman of generosity. She is a woman of love. And she is a woman of deep forgiveness. She is a woman of great joy and of great hope. And she is a woman of grace. I have met this woman that I believe that God created me and called me to be. And I meet her around here. I meet her around here. I meet her in the school where I teach. I meet her in the faces of single women who bring their kids in who are working two jobs trying to put their kids in this school, this little Catholic inner city school. She's there. That woman is there. I know she is. She's there in the beginners that I work with. We had a little beginner who came in not so long ago, this darling little woman in her 20s, and she said, "All I want to do is have a child. All I want to do is to have a child. But how could I ever bring an innocent baby into this alcoholic situation?" Oh, you can do it! I did it a lot! You know? My God, if Beth hadn't cut me short, I'd have 12! Jesus, Mary and Chuck! You know, I see that woman and I think to myself, there's a woman I can learn from. There's a woman who I can learn from whose life is other-directed. There's a woman I can learn from. I see that woman. I saw that woman that I want to be and that I believe that God calls me to be in my grandmother, who is married to really probably the meanest Irish drunk, you know, anywhere near, in the whole of County Galway. But you know what she did before, in those days before Al-Anon? She used to go to church and she just would light a candle and she'd let him go. And she used to drag me up to that church with her, which is why I continue to light candles, and she just let him go. I've seen the vision of this woman I believe that I want to be. She's all around me. She's all around me. I see this woman in the women that I sponsor. In the women that I sponsor. And you know what I tell those women I sponsor? I had one that called me just 3 weeks ago. She's in a panic. She broke up with this guy, and it was an ugly breakup, and she ran up his MasterCard bill. you know, it's just all kinds of nasty stuff going on. She's made amends. He's not too happy. She's done what she can. She's paying him back, blah, blah. But she hasn't seen him in 2 years, and he's in town, and he wants to get together. So she calls me, and she goes, "Oh, my God, what am I going to do? Oh, my God, he wants to see me. What do I say?" Blah, 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 blah. And I just say this to her, "Who do you want to be? Who do you want to be? Who is that woman that you would like to be tonight?" And she says, "Well, I don't want to be hysterical. I don't want to be an hysterical woman. I want to be a gentle woman. I don't want to keep talking about the MasterCard bill. I don't want to point out to him how well my life is going. I want to do this, and I want to be that, and I want to be interested in, and I want to be interested in him and what he's doing, and I want blah, 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 blah." She knows. She has her own vision. So I simply said to her, "Why don't you meet him and be that woman? Why don't you carry with you in hand that vision of the kind of woman that you want to be and act like her and say your prayers?" And that's what she did, and it went fine. That's what she did, and it was fine. I sponsor a woman who's being stalked. She really is being stalked. She has no idea what to do. She calls me. She's out of her mind, and I say the same thing. "Who do you want to be? What kind of woman do you want to be today?" "Well," she says, "I want to be a woman that takes action. I think I'll call his family. I'm going to call the police, blah, 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 blah. I think I'm going to stop screening my phones and just answer the phone when it rings. And if it's him, I'm just simply going to say, 'Sorry, I don't want to wish to talk to you. I'm not going to scream. I'm not going to holler. I'm going to hang up.' Why don't you act like that woman today?" See, that's what an inventory does for me. It keeps me focused on the kind of woman that I want to be today. And more importantly, the kind of woman that I believe that God invites me to be, the kind of woman that God calls me to be. I never ask the women that I sponsor to do something that I have not done or that I'm not doing. It's just that simple. I just don't. There's a man that I... I got a lot of time. There's this man that... I swim. You know, I mean, he just belongs to the Y. I mean, just somebody I know. And we exercise. You know, we happen to swim at the same time. And he's a married man. He's got two kids. And he's nice enough. But, you know, he always wants it to be a little more than that. And I've always said no, 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 and no. No, no, no. I mean, that's it. Why would I want to cause myself that kind of pain getting involved with a married man? Now, I know some women that do that. They do that. I usually say to them, "I have an idea. Why don't you just take an ice pick and drive it into your heart and get it over with?" I mean, really, it's just not what, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to do it. It's not my vision. It's just not my vision. Well, there aren't anybody else out there except for the married ones. Well, maybe that's a clue. Maybe that's a clue for you to hang up your gun and your steel leg hole trap and your net and just, you know, be happy with who you are. I don't know. I get a lot of clues all the time about how I'm supposed to be loving. I get clues all the time. Well, I want to meet somebody that's big and strong and exciting that's fun. Well, I have an idea. Why don't you become big and strong, exciting and fun, fall in love with yourself and be happy? That's pretty simple. But I'll tell you about this guy. You know, he just called me this past week and he says, "You're willing to swim with me?" I said, "No, I don't swim with you. We just happen to swim at the same time." "Well, couldn't you look at it as a cardiovascular exercise?" And I said, "No, I couldn't. No, no, and no." But you know what? There are some days where I really want to say to him, "Could you be over here in about an hour before the top of my head blows off?" But you know what? I really don't want to do that. I mean, I just know that. So it's not my vision. So don't do it. That's what I know. It ain't my vision. This woman in my vision also promptly admits when she's wrong. That's just the way it is. You've spoiled me. I get a spiritual hangover when I do stuff that I know I shouldn't have done, and I just have to admit it promptly. And it's just the best way for me, just to admit it promptly. Step 10 allows us to maintain ourselves in good working condition, free of unnecessary burdens. But I got to do them. You know, I got to do those daily inventories, and I have to admit when I'm wrong. I don't know what to tell you about step 11, and I'll tell you why. Because really for me, step 11 is just the biggest step in my life today. It wasn't always. I mean, it really wasn't always. There were years when, you know, step 1 was just enormous. And, you know, then step 2, and then step 3, and 4, 5, and then for years, you know, I'm just doing 6 and 7 and 6 and 7. But I really have to tell you, today, in 1998, step 11 to me is, well, it's just where I spend a lot of time. And I believe that I do know what God's will is for me. And I believe it has to do an awful lot with living a life that is happy, joyous, and free. And I can remember there were nights when I was sitting out in that family compound and my life was a wreck and my kids were afraid and my kids were anxious and my kids were getting hurt. And I used to go out and I used to pray by myself and I would just simply say, "I know this cannot be your will. I don't know what this is, but I just know that this is not your will. That I know." I believe that God's will is that I enter into this intimate relationship with God. And like any relationship that I am in, the quality of that relationship is always reflected in the amount of time and effort that I'm willing to give it. Remember that old Beatles song that used to say, you know, "The love you take is equal to the love you make." And I really believe that. I hear some really goofy things at meetings, you know. Well, I do my best prayer meditation while I'm driving. Oh, really? Well, that would never work for me. Because I'll tell you why. It says this: "By the time we've taken the previous 10 steps, our own experience is all the proof we need that some power greater than ourselves is working in our lives. We have learned that we need never be alone or at a loss for what to do, because this power is always available to comfort us and guide us. So it is only natural that we would want to take whatever actions we can to consciously improve our relationship with the God of our understanding. Prayer and meditation are the vehicles we use for spiritual communication." And the way I have been taught, those are just two separate things. You got your prayer over here, and you got your meditation over here. And prayer is when I'm, you know, I'm the talker, and meditation is when I'm the listener. And that's just the way that I was raised in Al-Anon. It's a big deal for me. You know, a few weeks ago, or maybe it was like, I don't know, 4 weeks ago or so, I was up in Wisconsin and I was at a restaurant, big table, you know, all Al-Anon women. And one of the women said, "How do you do the 11th step?" And, you know, and I was going through with her, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then I do this and then I do that and then I do that. And as I was telling her step by step, you know, I really began to feel really uncomfortable. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I always felt like I was like sitting there in the middle of Applebee's giving a sex inventory, you know, to everybody at the table. Because that is really how personal and intimate this 11th step is for me. It's just really personal today the way I used to do it. Just like any relationship, it is always changing. But what has not changed for me is that I find it absolutely necessary in order to live with the serenity that I have become spoiled by, that I carve out of my day, that I really carve out of my day, quality time for prayer and meditation. When I was up in the Cape with my family, you know, that quality time got, you know, it got, I just had to grab it where I could. And I mean, my life didn't fall apart, but I noticed a difference. I noticed a difference when I get away from the routine that I have come to do in my life. I pay the price. I pay the price. I just simply, you know, ask God that I do, that I am, and that I love whatever it is that I'm supposed to be that day. And you know what I find is true? Is that, you know, after when I sit there quietly and meditate, I don't get any big messages. Every once in a while I have. But usually, just nothing happens. And that's all right. Just to sit in that sacred presence of the God of my understanding is enough for me every day. But somewhere throughout that day, something will happen. Somebody will say something. Somebody will call. It's usually, you know, it's usually somebody I sponsor. It's really, I cannot tell you how God works through those women. Something will happen where I know that God is responding to me. It's just, that's the way that it is. It just is. And I do swim in the morning. I've done that for years. And it's a wonderful thing for me. I just go underwater and early in the morning, and I just swim. You wouldn't believe stuff that comes to me. It just does. Maybe it's the water, maybe it's the quiet, but it's a wonderful place for me to be in the morning, underwater. I think the most painful thing that's happened to me in a long time is when I had to get rid of this bad kid and send him to Montana. I really didn't know where I was sending him, but I believed that my friend in California, and I found it necessary one day in January of 1997 to take that little 16-year-old kid and with his little dyed gold dreadlocks, you know, and his beads and all that stuff, hold him in my arms and tell him that I loved him and I thought maybe this would help, and I put him on a plane from Montana. That was the hardest thing that I ever had to do in my life. And I sat for months in the presence and with the God of my understanding, and I just grieved. I would weep. But the wonderful thing is, I knew I was never alone, and I knew that that kid was in the hands of a loving God. That's what I knew. But my sponsor tells me this: working these steps is no inoculation for the pain. Working the steps is no inoculation for the pain of alcoholism. It pained me to have to send my flesh and blood away. It pained me, but I knew he was going to be okay. The very first night, I lost it all. The very first night when he got out there, I called and called and said, did he get there? Because he had to make a stop in Salt Lake City, and I was afraid he might run. Did he get there? They called me back, and they said, we have him, but he's not very happy. I said, what do you mean he's not very happy? Well, we had to cut his hair. And I thought, what? Now, this hair got him thrown off the wrestling team because it was a health hazard, and I hated the hair, but you know what? They cut my little boy's hair. So I cried all through the night. The next morning, my older one said to me, what is wrong with you? And I said, they cut his hair. He said, Mom, what's wrong with you? And I said, what have we done? So he drank a little bit. So he didn't come home on the weekends. So he's been thrown out of every school he's ever been in. Is that so bad? That was hard for me. But I'll tell you, that step 11, I just immersed myself in it. And I always had a sense that no matter what, all is well. All is well. It's going to be all right. And I'm not alone in this. You know, 2 days ago, it was the one year my brother's wife died. My young brother's wife had breast cancer. She battled it for 2 years, and it went into her liver, and then within three days, she was gone. And young, he's left now with three little kids. My family's a very, very funny family. I mean, they're a funny family. And the six brothers and sisters, we go away for a weekend to New York City at Christmas time, just the six of us. We don't bring my mother and we don't bring spouses, although spousal survival rate's not good in my family anymore, but there's just the six of us. We have a wonderful time, but we're not very good around death because it's hard to make tragic death funny. We really don't know what to do with it. So I just every day I'd say, God, who do you want me to be for my brother? Where do you want me to be? What do you want me to do? What do you want me to say? And honest to God, in those 3 days as she lay dying, and in those days after she had died, my life was absolutely and totally directed. I did things and said things I had no idea I could do or I could say. And after the wake, the whole family was around. We're all in the funeral home. And my brother turned to me and he said, I mean me. And he said, will you say a few words? And of course I make this face like, ah! And then he turned to my sister, who's really the religious fanatic, and he started to say, well, maybe you, and I said, Tim, I'll say a few words. And I'm telling you, if I don't say so myself, except I couldn't tell you what I said, I opened my mouth, and here's this woman, I mean, this is my lovely sister-in-law, and her mother and father, and her sisters and brothers, and my whole family, and all these close friends, and I don't know to this day what I said. But whatever I said, as God is my witness, was straight from the mouth of God. I just opened my mouth, and, honest to God, I think I turned into Oral Roberts. I don't know what I said, but, I mean, me, and I'm always such a smart, like, nah, nah, and this stuff came out of my mouth. And it's simply because I'm willing, and was willing, and still am willing, to carve out of my day that time, to pray only for God's will and the power to carry it out. I can't, really, that power that I had that day to speak words of comfort was a direct result of step 11, a direct result of step 11. Sometimes, I don't know if you ever run into this, sometimes I just think my life is so dumb, When I was up at Cape Cod, I visited a college friend of mine who, of course, has one child who's in Harvard. Where else? And, she has this wonderful job. She markets jewelry for her sister in New York City when she's not running her own consulting firm in Boston, and they have this lovely cottage in Cape Cod, and she looks wonderful, and she looks great, and I love going. I mean, I have breakfast with her every year when I'm in Cape Cod, and then I drive back, and I think, my life is so dumb. My life is so dumb. I have these seven terrible kids. I teach high school in the inner city to these rotten kids that continue to get pregnant after I teach them about sexuality, and they just do it to embarrass me. My life is so dumb. I've been in Al-Anon for 16 and a half years. I don't have a kid that doesn't drink. My life is so dumb. And then I pray. And I say, God, as dumb as my life is what you meant me to do, this is where you want me to be. All right, all right, all right. All right, all right, all right. I'll do this dumb stuff and I'll stay here. I don't know why. I know much bigger and better plans for me, but I guess this is where I'm supposed to be. I don't know. Dumb life. Mom, my kids are gone this summer. It's wonderful. Unfortunately, tomorrow when I get home, three of them are coming back. And I'm really not looking forward to that. They're a lot of trouble, my kids. They are. The one that's home isn't a big drinker, but he's just nasty. He's not a big drinker, he's just nasty. He's the one that just came back from Quantico. On Tuesday night, he walks out the door and he's dressed in camouflage. And I said, Nick, where are you going? And he said, I'm going to scare someone to death. I said, you're going to get shot. No, I won't. They're not armed. And then he walks out the door. 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm sleeping, not much keeps me awake anymore. I'm sleeping and I hear my door, Mom, Mom. I said, what? And he said, don't answer the phone. I said, why not? Just don't answer the phone. And then I think, my life is dumb. Really, my life is dumb. Don't answer the phone. What? So the next morning I said to him, what did you do? He said, and people think you got to have alcohol to have fun. Did my watch stop, or is it really this time? Is it really that time? I thought we were, Anyway, all right, so my life is dumb, blah, 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 page 63. In the past, most of us said frantic prayers in the hope that God would do our will and give us what we wanted. But our experience has shown us that our will often gets us into trouble and generally leads to disappointment in the end. 4 or 5 years, I've never told this story, and oh, you people from Cincinnati, you can't repeat this. really, really, you can't. But about 4 or 5 years after Rick died, I started to go out with a man that, oh, wasn't an AA, wasn't an alcoholic. He was just this wonderful, wonderful man. Oh, my God. He had 3 kids. I had 7. Maybe he thought that was a lot. I don't know. It really isn't 10. Who's, oh, you just make 3 more sandwiches. But at any rate, no, I really didn't want to marry this. I mean, I really didn't. I really do have the spirit of marriage. But, you know, I could have dated that guy for the rest of my life. We were just perfect. I mean, we're just like this. What I was thinking, he would say. And then what he would say, I was just thinking. I mean, well, I thought this is the payoff. This is the payoff for being good. See, yeah, boy, good things happen to those who wait. This will be fine. We'll date for the rest of our lives. This is going to be wonderful. I'm so happy. I'm so happy. This is great. Although my father used to say, "Never trust a man that would date a woman with 7 kids." Anyway, but I wasn't paying any attention to my dad. Anyway. So this is great. This is wonderful. And you know what happened? Really nothing happened. It's just that, you know, he just stopped calling and there was never a fight. And we still got along to this day. So, I mean, we still get along to this day. We're just great friendship. But he started to go out with somebody else and then somebody said, "Hey, did you hear he's getting married?" And I thought, "You've got to be kidding me. What is he, an idiot? He's going to marry somebody else, you know?" And then I get the invitation in the mail to his engagement party. And I thought, oh, come on, God. I mean, take my heart and walk on it, please. Do I have to go to this engagement party? So I call my sponsor and I say, "I don't want to do this." And she said, "You have to. You have to. You are a dear friend of his. You have to." Oh. So I call this woman that I know who's in Al-Anon, whose husband has left her for a younger woman. And when her daughter got married, he brings the girlfriend to the wedding. And I called her and said, "How'd you get through that wedding?" And she said, "You know, I prayed. I just prayed. And I just thought, you know, I am not letting somebody else's behavior affect who I'm going to be." And she said, "I just dressed up and it was great. But I took God with me." So I thought, well, that's a good idea. So I said to my kids, "So I'm going back in a little bit, you know, and I get dressed up and I'm driving over there and I'm saying to God, okay, I'll do this, you know, because this is the woman that I want to be. I want to be gracious and I really do. I'm crazy about this guy and I wish him well, even though he's obviously marrying the wrong woman. But I'm going to go, you know, and I look nice. And the only thing I just want when I be there, I want to act right and I want to be a service." So I go to this lovely engagement party at somebody's house and I walk in and I'm very nice to everybody and I've got God with me and I'm being normal and I'm being regular and it's time to eat and I take my little plate and sit down. He comes and sits down right next to me. Of course. I mean, of course, you know, because we really are such a good relationship. And we're yakking and yakking and yakking and I can't stand it anymore. I mean, I'm there about 40 minutes and I think, okay, enough's enough. So I turned to him and I said, "I got to get back to my kids." I love to use my kids as an excuse. It's been working for years. So I said to him, "I've got to get back to my kids. But before I go, could I get you some coffee?" And he said, "Oh, that'd be great." So I went and I got this cup of coffee. Of course, know exactly how he takes it, a little bit of cream, a little bit of sugar. And I brought it back and I put it in front of him and I said, "Good luck. This is going to be great for you. I'll see you." And I walked out to the car. I got in the car and I put my head on the wheel, and I mean, I sobbed. And I don't cry much. I mean, I just sobbed and sobbed and sobbed and sobbed and sobbed. I mean, we were like peas and carrots. He's marrying this cucumber. What? I mean, what? Shit. I mean, I say to God, "This is the stupidest of all your plans. This is the stupidest plan. It's obvious to everybody how well we get along. This is the dumbest plan. But I am willing to go along with you. I am going to make a decision here, and I am willing to go along with your will for me. It's dumb, but I'm willing to believe that you've got a better plan for both of us." And you know what? That was the end of that. That was the end of that. That guy's exactly where he's supposed to be, and I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be, too. But that does not come easily for me unless I'm really paying attention to that 11th step.
All right, number 12, having had a spiritual awakening as we all use steps, we try to carry this message to others and to practice these principles in all our affairs. More commonly, though, we experience a gradual awakening of the spirit, a gentle metamorphosis in the way we see ourselves and others, a slow and subtle unfolding of our own inner beauty. Some of us actually feel reborn, hopeful, free of the fears and burdens that had previously prevented us from truly living. Thus, although our circumstances may not have changed, our lives improve dramatically because we perceive them in a new and a clearer way. All I can tell you is this: the experience of God's love in my life has changed me. It has just absolutely changed me to the core. And one of the main ways that I experience God's love in my life these days is through you. That's just the way that it works out. It is through you, knowing you, being with you, listening to you, sharing strength, hope, and experience with you. It is how I best know and experience God's love in my life. And for me, it has been an absolute spiritual awakening. The people in my life, they overwhelm me. They absolutely overwhelm me. They are so good, and they are so kind, and they are so loyal, and they are so patient. And that's just not people in the program. That's people, just people that God has absolutely filled my life with. Just absolutely filled my life with. I come together in meetings with men and women who, when it comes to kids, who don't know where their kids are. They don't know where their kids are. I come to meetings and sit elbow to elbow with men and women who have buried their children as a result of this disease. I go to meetings with women, you know, whose husbands have left them long ago for younger women. I'm in a meeting these days with a woman whose husband left her for an older woman. We like him. Anyway. I'll tell you, I am all the time. And these people are courageous, they are compassionate, and they live lives of grace. They live lives of grace. And I am lucky enough to hang around with them. You know, the people that I teach with, I teach with saintly people. There's this little shrine, actually it's between Cincinnati and St. Louis. There's a little shrine up in the woods on the side of a monastery that's located in Indiana. And I have been there before. And in this little shrine in the woods, there is, the candles. I'm big on lighting candles. And one time on my way to St. Louis, I pulled off and I went to the shrine. And I went in front of the statue of Mary. I lit a candle and I asked her to take care of my son. And then I drove on to St. Louis. I was telling the story to an old brother, religious brother, Marianist brother with whom I teach. He's really old. He's in his 70s. And about a year, sorry, maybe he's in his 80s. I don't know how old he is. He creaks, I know that. He visits monasteries a lot and stuff. Do you know, after I told him that story about that shrine and about the candle, and of course everybody knows about my one son, almost a year later in my mailbox at school, there was a little note, and it was written on a little holy card from this shrine, and it said, "Another candle burns for your son, Brother Don." That's the kind of people that I teach with. That's the kind of people that I'm with all the time. Who could not carry this message? Who could not carry this message of love? Who could not carry this message of this great love in their lives? I don't know how to shut up about it. I don't know how to be quiet about it. Who could not carry that message? Who could say no to any request to share your strength, hope, and experience? I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to be quiet about it because it has absolutely saved my life. We cannot carry a message we have not learned for ourselves. In the meantime, we carry a message of experience, strength, and hope every time we share at an Al-Anon meeting, every time we make or accept a program, telephone call, or perform a service for our group. Each of us has a great deal to offer to others, and that will only grow as we grow. To tell you the truth, this kind of stuff is the least important thing that I do in service. The most important thing I believe that I do is working with other women and being willing to listen, being willing to share with them not only my successes, but certainly my failures as well. As we recover, as alcoholism and its effects no longer dominate our thoughts, we find that these spiritual principles apply not only to alcoholic situations, but to all the aspects of our lives. I'm a teacher. I spend my days with 16 to 17-year-old kids. They're not easy kids. They're rough kids. They're right off the streets, some of them. But you know what? The principles that I find in this program allow me to be a good teacher. They allow me to be a good teacher because I don't judge my kids, and they know that. They know that. And you know what? They think I'm teaching them theology. I'm not. I'm teaching them the principles of this program, and one day they'll recognize it. They will. We say the Serenity Prayer before class, and some of them say, "What are we saying that prayer for?" And I say, "So when you get to where you belong, you'll know something." Good. This worked out perfectly. This is the good son. I guess I just picked that up. I just got this yesterday. This will give you an idea what's coming home tomorrow. I just got this on Friday, actually, as I was walking out the door. This is from camp. "Dear Mom, camp is fun. The trip was good. It was like being in a beer commercial for 2 weeks. Love, Dan." I don't know what that means. Nor do I really care. And I'll tell you why. Because of this, and this is what I'm going to close with, because I simply cannot improve on this. This is from our literature. "If we willingly surrender ourselves to the spiritual discipline of the 12 steps, our lives will be transformed. We will become mature, responsible individuals with a great capacity for joy, fulfillment, and wonder. Though we may never be perfect, continued spiritual progress will reveal to us our enormous potential. We will discover that we are both worthy of love and loving. We will love others without losing ourselves and will learn to accept love in return. Our sight, once clouded and confused, will clear and we will be able to perceive reality and recognize truth. Courage and fellowship will replace fear. We will be able to risk failure to develop new hidden talents. Our lives, no matter how battered and degraded, will yield hope to share with others. We will begin to feel and come to know the vastness of our emotions, but we will not be slaves to them. Our secrets will no longer bind us in shame. As we gain the ability to forgive ourselves, our families, and the world, our choices will expand. With dignity, we will stand for ourselves, but not against our fellows. Serenity and peace will have meaning for us as we allow our lives and the lives of those we love to flow day by day with God's ease, balance, and grace. No longer terrified, we will discover we are free to delight in life's paradox, mystery, and awe. We will laugh more. Fear will be replaced by faith, and gratitude will come naturally as we realize that our higher power is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves." Thank you very much. Oh, God. Oh, my God.